This is DW News live from Berlin. It's the bloodiest day so far in the recent Myanmar pro-democracy protests. Police open fire on the protesters with live rounds. The UN says 18 people lie dead. We'll catch up with an activist in Mandalay, also on the show. Lights, camera, action for the famous Berlinale Film Festival here in Berlin this week. But this year's movies are for critics' eyes only, as fans miss out due to the pandemic. I'm Nicole Fröhlich. Welcome to the program. More bloodshed on the streets of Myanmar as security forces use increasingly violent tactics to deter protesters. The UN says at least 18 people were killed and over 30 wounded on Sunday. Civilians are demanding the return of their elected leaders and an end to military rule.
Protesters try their best to smother clouds of tear gas, retreating to wash out their eyes. Security forces are becoming more aggressive in their determination to end civilian protests against the military's takeover of their country and the forced removal of elected leaders, even if that means taking lives. Local media are reporting casualties in multiple locations. They shot at us yesterday and the day before. I notice it, but I don't care about it. I already said goodbye to my family before I left home, in case I don't come back. Marches took place throughout the country, the crackdown and the threat of arrest not deterring those on the streets. But the crackdown isn't limited to the demonstrators, the military junta also taking aim at the civil service. They fired Myanmar's ambassador to the United Nations after he pleaded for international support.
We need further strongest possible action from the international community to immediately end the military coup, to stop oppressing the innocent people, to return the state power to the people, and to restore the democracy.
Myanmar has been in a state of unrest since the military seized power and detained elected civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi and members of her government on the 1st of February. Since then, the numbers of Burmese people taking to the streets in protest has been growing by the thousands in locations all over the country. They say they won't back down until their leaders have been safely released and handed back their jobs. The military accuses Suu Kyi of importing illegal walkie-talkies and breaching coronavirus restrictions. A hearing for her case will be conducted on Monday.
To get more information about the situation on the ground, I'm joined now by an activist in Mandalay. Just a heads up to our viewers, we won't disclose his full name to protect his identity. Sam, good to speak to you again. Sunday was reportedly the bloodiest day since the beginning of the crisis in your country. What have you experienced in Mandalay this weekend?
Yes, today is the bloodiest day in, Spring Revolution. So, yeah, we have lost many people. The death toll could be higher than 18 people because I have seen in the social media videos that the military is, destroying the evidence, like dragging the wounded and the dead bodies from the street, and they are covering up the blood, and they are also wiping off the security camera footages. So, yeah, the death toll could be much more higher than 18 people right now.
The police are increasingly getting more and more aggressive in the response to the demonstration. What effect is that having on the civil disobedience movement?
Yes, I think people are, right now feeling all kinds of emotions. So even some of the police officers have now gone into civil disobedience movement. So I think people are getting more angry and more emotional. So this could lead to a widespread 100% civil disobedience movement in the country.
Myanmar's deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi is due to face a court hearing on Monday on charges brought against her by the military. The protests are, of course, against the coup and the junta, but how central is the battle for Suu Kyi's return to freedom to the pro-democracy movement?
Yes, Aung San Suu Kyi is our, you know, embodiment of democracy, so her release means everything to, you know, everyone. And we're not gonna back down because we have lost so many people today. And if we back down, their life will be in vain.
That was Sam, a pro-democracy activist in Mandalay. Thank you very much for your time and be safe.
Thank you.
Let's now get you up to speed on some other stories we're following for you at this hour. In Hong Kong, police have charged dozens of prominent pro-democracy activists with subversion under Beijing's sweeping new national security law. The activists were arrested in January for taking part in a mock primary election to select candidates to Hong Kong's legislature. Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny has arrived at a penal colony in the town of Pokrov, some 100 kilometers east of Moscow. He's serving a 2.5-year term. He was convicted of violating parole while in Germany recovering from a poisoning attack. The EU has since imposed sanctions on senior Russian officials over the Kremlin's crackdown on Navalny and his supporters. Unidentified gunmen have killed at least 11 people, including a child, in the Mexican state of Jalisco. Two others were wounded. The state prosecutor's office said the attackers fired from two pickup trucks in the town of Tonalá. Jalisco is one of the epicenters of the country's drug warfare. For over seven decades, the Berlinale Film Festival saw scores of movie stars and their fans descend on the German capital to celebrate the cinematic achievements of the year. But the pandemic means that for the first time ever, the red carpet will remain rolled up and fans will be missing out. In this edition, the audience will be reduced to a select group of critics and industry professionals who will watch the contenders for the Golden Bear via live stream.
It's a first in the history of the Berlinale. Festival directors Carlo Chatrian and Mariette Rissenbeck alone in the cinema. For now, only buyers, distributors, and press can see their film selection for this year.
Welcome.
From Iran comes the directorial debut of Mariam Mohaddam. She also acts in the film, playing a woman whose husband is executed after a miscarriage of justice.
البته که هیچ چیز جای همسر و برادر شما رو پر نمی‌کنه ولی حتما خواست خدا بوده.
اون بیچاره که دیگه رفت. خدا قوی باش. مگه این بچه جز تو کیو داره؟
It's an indictment of a merciless system.
من خدمت رو رسیدم بگم یه بدهی به بابک داشتم.
But also a chamber piece dealing with timeless questions of guilt and justice. There's also some strong political cinema from Belarus. Director Alexei Palyan followed the protests that erupted after the presidential election. Courage is his first full-length documentary film. It shows the bravery of protesters using very limited means to fight for change in Belarus. German cinema is in the competition with no fewer than four films, including the adaptation of Erich Kästner's novel, Fabian. The movie is set in tumultuous Berlin in 1931. A crazy and melancholic time trip takes us to the Weimar Republic. We encounter a ménage à trois and dissect a society in decay. The festival organizers hope that in June they'll be able to roll out the red carpet and welcome fans and stars once again, just like last year and all the years before.
Let's bring in our expert for all things Berlinale. Culture reporter Scott Roxborough has been covering the festival for DW for years. Hi, Scott. Berlinale is about to kick off, and you are... at home. I have to admit, that's something I never thought I'd see. But are you one of the lucky few who will get to see the films?
I am one of the lucky few who are going to be able to see the films. Of course, I'll be seeing them here from home on my couch and not in a cinema, as was intended. And because this week, the Berlinale will be doing a festival really for just a very limited audience. It'll be for the jury. It'll be for the film industry worldwide who'll be tuning in on their computers. And it'll be for film critics like myself who will also be able to watch movies that'll be shown this week. Everybody else is going to have to wait until the summer. They're planning to hold another film festival in June in Berlin, a proper one, hopefully with audiences, with cinemas, because Berlin is the world's largest public film festival, and it really wouldn't be the same to show these movies without having the Berlin audience there to celebrate them or to condemn.
It's certainly difficult to predict what the world is going to look like in June, but what is this summer special of the Berlinale supposed to look like?
Yeah, ideally they want it to be basically this, a version of the Berlin Film Festival that we know. So with real cinemas, people being able to watch the films in large groups. But I recently talked to the heads of the film festival, and they admitted that they, of course, don't know. They don't know what the virus is going to do. They don't know what conditions are going to be like in the summer. They're very optimistic that they'll be able to do something with the public. So maybe open-air cinemas, if nothing else. But of course, they really hope that they can have a proper film festival with proper red carpets. And I think that's going to be a big issue, because I hope by this summer people will actually be able to travel, because it would be a real shame to have a Berlin Film Festival in the city and have great red carpets but no stars to walk down them.
All right, I'm ready to take notes here. What films are you especially looking forward to?
Well, on the sort of political side, and as the big star side, there's The Mauritanian, which is a Jodie Foster film where she plays a lawyer assigned to an accused terrorist in Guantanamo Bay. It's one of the biggest films showing at the Berlinale this year. But for me, I'm really interested in the German films this year, the foreign competition, and one I'd really point you towards. It's a science fiction romantic comedy by Maria Schrader. And it stars Dan Stevens, who you might know from Downton Abbey, British actor, but here he plays a German-speaking android, a robot, programmed as a love robot to satisfy the needs of an intelligent, cynical, but actually quite romantic a German scientist. So this is sort of like a Pygmalion story, but it's told from the female perspective. I'm really interested to see it, especially because Maria Schrader is a phenomenal director. She just won an Emmy for directing the Netflix series on Orthodox, and so I'm really interested to see what she does with this story.
All right, and I'm looking forward to your reviews. Thank you very much, Scott Roxborough from DW Culture.
Nathan?
Some Bundesliga soccer now, and Leipzig made history in a thrilling match against Gladbach. Not only did they keep their title hopes alive with a last-minute winner, it was also their first-ever Bundesliga victory after being 2 goals down.
Two of the best coaches in the business came to grips in Leipzig. Julian Nagelsmann's home side on a 4-game winning streak founded on a physical defence. But a little too much muscle from Deio Upamecano meant that Marco Rose's men would open the scoring from the spot for Jonas Hofmann after just 6 minutes. It was a bad start and things would get worse for Leipzig just 13 minutes later. Marcus Thuram was waiting unmarked at the back post in the 19th minute. A deflection would make it a 2-0 lead for Gladbach at half-time. In the second stanza, the home side started to look more menacing in attack, and when Christopher Nkunku finally beat Jan Sommer in the 57th minute, the home side began to look like an irresistible force. 10 minutes later, Yusuf Poulsen struck from long range. The Dane had levelled the scores and set the stage for an all-out siege on Gladbach's goal in the final 25 minutes. Emil Forsberg went close from a free kick. The tension of a brilliant contest building to a crescendo in the 90th minute when Norwegian Alexander Sørloth used his head to give his side a last-minute win. The conversation continued after the final whistle about whether he had used his hands as well. Leipzig needing no words as they roared back into title contention.
You're watching DW News live from Berlin.